Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Latest Shiny. This is Rob Hirschfeld. I am driving without my co-host, so we'll probably take some more jigs and jags, and I have to do my own timekeeping. So we'll figure that out as we go. Somebody here will help me keep it short. Joining me today is Chris Short, who I know mainly because he's doing this amazing job with DevOpsish, this newsletter, Telegram group, just building a community around it that is just, you know, sincere and present, and I've really been enjoying that. And you have a day job too with Red Hat doing OpenShift on the OpenShift team, which is actually why we called you up to get you on, because I've been struggling with operators and whether they're a good, frankly, whether they're a good idea or not. And so, Chris, can you give us a little background and then help enlighten me as to why everybody should be writing operators?
So, I mean, not everyone should be writing operators, but if they make sense for you, you should definitely write it. But essentially, operators are, you know, like DevOps is like a culture and a pattern. Operators are based on a pattern. The operator pattern was created by CoreOS before the Red Hat acquisition. And since the acquisition, we have embraced it wholeheartedly and have built hundreds of operators to run our Kubernetes platform OpenShift in, you know, pretty much any cloud environment. So the idea behind an operator is that you essentially write either as code in Go or Python or Ansible or Bash, however you want to write it, operational piece of logic that handles things like installation, upgrades, backups, HADR kind of things for any of your services or applications that might be running in a Kubernetes environment. So that obviously relies on CRDs, which just went GA a couple releases ago in Kubernetes land. So it is really picked up momentum of late since CRDs have gone GA. And I am here to help you not struggle with it as much anymore. How about that?
So we need to decouple this a little bit because CRD is a custom resource
definition. Yes.
Which basically is, I want to get to operators. We need to start, actually, I had a conversation with somebody who was talking like, oh, we're talking operators. I'm like, well, what about CRDs? And they're like, I don't know. What are those? I'm like, really?
Okay.
So let's start with that. Kubernetes basically, a CRD is a way to extend the object space in Kubernetes, right?
Right. That's the basic.
So, and then when I go ahead.
So I like to think of a CRD as like a, you know, create your own or BYO API, right? Like bring your own API, right? Like that's kind of what that's CR and CRD is going to actually do for you, right? And there's a lot of nuance in that. But yeah, go ahead.
Well, so because, you know, when you add, but it's not really a full API, it's really just a object. I mean, the Kubernetes API is sort of like extend itself all over the place.
Right. And this is like controllers and CRs are just more ways to just build on top of the API, right? And when I say BYO API, it really depends on what you're trying to do with your operator too, right? Like if you're just trying to call out to like, on like an external load balancer or something to update like a service, like IP address, like, meh, okay. That's an, you can do that with an operator, but that's not necessarily right. Like the full capability of an operator either.
So, but I'm still a little stuck on the CRDs, right?
Cause sure.
The CRDs, there's my dog.
Hey.
The CRDs are, you know, pretty flat objects, right? Mm-hmm. I started to crack open operators and I basically came along a do not, thou shalt not use CRDs in a whole bunch of, like, there's a whole bunch of, like, rules. Maybe they're being violated, but rules about, you know, CRDs should be, you know, not written that often, not very complex, not very deep.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be actions. They should be nouns, right? There's a, is that still in sort of the current vogue of thinking?
So just did a blog post with a coworker of mine or fellow Red Hatter, Daniel Messer. You know, title is Kubernetes Operators Best Practices. And, you know, there's you need to have a reconciliation loop, essentially, right? Like you have to watch for events. You have to be able to, you know, reconcile, you know, as things are happening, right? Like your operator has to be able to do things. You need to have, you know, some basic premises of, you know, validation, you know, initializing resources and finalizing them and, you know, having ownership, you know, having that status managed, you know, basic things, that we kind of like heavily imply, but, you know, as far as, you know, the CRs themselves and CRDs, they like you like literally everything in Kubernetes should be as simple as possible, right? So like business complexity is what adds to some of the problems that we see, right? Like we get that.
Those darn business rules.
Right. But like, that's why operators exist too, right? Like we understand right. that you're going to need backups and you're going to need to be able to do like automated updates inside Kubernetes because you can, right? You don't want to have a 14-step process or, you know, maybe run three or four different scripts to update something. You have to, you know, embrace these cloud native things or these Kubernetes native primitives and use them to your advantage, if that makes sense.
So that
CRs themselves need to be clean and, you know, relatively simple because, well, why make it hard? If you have too much operational knowledge baked into your CR, you're going to have a lot of operational problems with it because you're going to have all these ifs or else's or, you know, all these weird things where instead of having one operator to do everything, you should have multiple operators to do a few things, right? You know, or application-based operators. So, for example, you see a lot of, you know, if you go to operatorhub.io, you see like an etcd operator or a Percona operator or a MongoDB operator, and that's going to handle everything for, you know, like Percona ExtraDB cluster. It's going to handle, you know, CrunchyDB's Postgres implementation for HA on OpenShift, right? Like, it's not going to handle the etcd component of that and all these other bits and pieces. It's going to only manage the app and let Kubernetes take care of the rest.
So, but that, I mean, it's the operator that's doing the management. So we have this, you know, thin interface point, an object to write, you know, hey, I need a database. I need it to be this. The operator's watching for an event. So basically that, that model changes. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the operator, so there's a pod. I mean, operator's really code in a pod, right?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. I mean, it's a tiny executable essentially running inside your cluster that looks for events. And then, you know, you basically declare your state in your CRD and it sees an event that you know implies a state change and then does something, right?
Makes perfect sense. And then, yeah, so when you write data into that CRD, that's sort of your control point. Mm-hmm. The operator program watches for that thing to happen. It says, oh, I now need to take some action, some state change. It goes and does the set up a database, talk to etcd, run Ansible
plans. Yeah, you can run Ansible playbooks, yeah.
HashiCorp just announced one that runs Terraform plans, I think, or actually interfaces to their Terraform cloud.
Yeah. No, I read that last week. Yeah, no, they're like, everybody's making operators now. Like
everybody's popping them out. And so, yeah. And then, so it takes some, it does that, it does the thing. Mm-hmm. And then it writes data back to that CRD and says, I did the thing.
Yeah. Essentially it, you know, events out that I did this thing. Here was the status done, you know, execute next thing or, you know, continue waiting for events, that kind of deal.
Okay.
The implied, you know, idea is that like it should feel like if this were, you know, a much, you know, simpler, you know, less complex system that wasn't running as fast, that like this is almost like a CLI kind of experience where you hit, you know, do something. Okay. Now echo $?, right? Like you want to have that kind of experience with the operator itself and that Unix kind of philosophy to, just do the thing, give me the output, and then let me act on that if I need to.
So, I mean, I guess when I think of that, I mean, it makes sense to me that you're basically, it's a, you know, we would describe that in Rack and Team as a wall, and you're writing a request on the wall, something's marring the wall, it goes off, takes actions. Is it good practice to have the operator come in and say, hey, I got the ball, I'm working on it? Like there's an intermediate, I mean, there's all these messaging requirements to make something like the scale where you're saying, you know, you have some interlocks and you have like a, you gave me a request, I saw it, I'm telling you, I'm in the middle, it did it, it didn't do it, it failed. Mm-hmm. Or is that left to each operator to build, or is there an emerging pattern?
So there's quite a few like ways to do it, ways to build an operator. And we have, you know, levels of maturity. We have a maturity model. I don't necessarily like love the layout of it or anything, or like some of the terminology, but like we have phase one to phase five. Like phase five is called autopilot, which that includes horizontal and vertical scaling and, you know, scheduled tuning and all this other, you know, like anomaly detection, everything, you know, AI. And so like that's like pie in the sky autopilot, like legit, like, you know, level five, like driving type Tesla thing. So that's, you know, that's very hard to like operationalize, but people can do it.
But for the operator, or for the operator, it's for the thing the operator is affecting, or the operator itself?
The operator can affect the thing, right? Like the operator is in charge of touching a thing. In general, it is, you know, a service or an application. Okay. So like the operator touches the database. And if it is a, you know, let's say phase three lifecycle, you know, you can handle the application lifecycle, storage, backup, failure, recovery, that kind of thing, right? So it's watching for an event. It sees, hey, all pods down. Okay, bring all the pods back up. Or it sees, you know, hey, you know, a persistent volume just attached. You know, we're out of disks. You know, go find another volume somewhere, get more disks somewhere. You know, add more persistent volume if needed, kind of thing, right? You can do that with an operator and say, okay, give me a backup here, and then be done. The idea is that you layer these things step by step, right? Like you get the installation done, then you get the upgrade done, then you figure out how to do all the backup and failover.
What you're describing is actually using operators to manage the Kubernetes cluster itself in that case. So they would
not necessarily. You can manage all the apps with an operator as well, right? Like if I'm doing application delivery, I want to be able to do that with an operator. I want to be able to do essentially everything with an operator, right? Like it's kind of trying to be that Swiss Army knife for Kubernetes application and service management.
Which makes sense. I mean, I know that Red Hat's OpenShift, the new version of the OpenShift installer, is very operator focused, right? It's it's a chain of operators,
right?
Sort of being one to another.
Like if I install like an OpenShift cluster with all the bells and whistles, there's, I think, just under 200 operators running on that, right? I'm talking with serverless, with monitoring, with everything running on that cluster. And all those operators are doing is making sure that the declared state for every service on the cluster is running. And that includes things like Knative, the dashboard, the, you know, Kiali, the whole nine yards, all the, you know, all the projects underneath the hood are all using operators and interacting with each other with operators. The entire installation process, operators. We're all in on the operator pattern. And, you know, that's paying off for us in the ways that, you know, like going all in on Linux did. Mm-hmm. In the sense of, you know, these operators, I like to, you know, like that's the ls command. That's the unique command. That's the cd command, right? Like these are the Kubernetes Unix-like tools of the future, I feel like.
I guess, I mean, when I think about though, and that number of operators, that then somewhere you're going to have a view panel that basically shows you know, all the CRDs, and then somehow you have to know what pods are backing the CRD, and if there's issues, you have to see that it's there or that it's working.
The operator does that. The operator, you don't necessarily care about which pods are. You, the person, the human operator, do not necessarily care about, you know, which pods are running where. The operator manages that. You tell the operator, this is how I want this, right?
Through the CRD. But right. I mean, I've been troubleshooting, you know, Kubernetes stuff. It's, you know, if something's not working, you are trying to figure out, you know, what's going on. You're, you know, doing logs against containers to try and figure out, you know, what errors they're throwing. It feels, you know, it feels like magic, which can be awesome when it works and, you know, very hard to understand when it doesn't.
I think, yeah, like any, what's the quote? Any technology is indistinguishable from magic or whatever. I think there's a lot of that in Kubernetes in general right now. And I think your, you know, frustration is, you know, merited, and your questioning is, you know, with reason, because a lot of it does seem a little magical at times. And it just, you know, the idea of CRDs, I think in general, is magical in the sense, because you have to wrap your mind around the idea that you're creating something out of nothing, right? Like you're literally writing like text in a YAML file and creating an object in Kubernetes with it. And you know, out of thin air, you have now created this thing, right? Like, so like wrapping your mind around that and then saying, okay, now since I can create this thing, I can now do all these other things with it with just a little bit of code or Ansible or whatever I need to do in this operator framework SDK. And then you can actually, you know, package and productize your operator. And I know that's kind of a big deal for you. That, you know, having something to run on top of Kubernetes was a discussion the last time we talked, right? Like, is there a killer app for Kubernetes? No, but there are some really killer like operators out there right now. That's for sure.
I guess so there's a question in my mind, because some of what you're describing, I'm like, I thought Helm was going to be the way that we would deliver apps into Kubernetes, but Helm is very much like an installer. It doesn't really operationalize it. And so,
right. Like I look at Helm as right. Like it is the, you know, the tar, you know, the tar and the gzip of the Kubernetes world, right? Like it's going to get me the download and the up and running of the thing. Once I get to that like point,
it should become the thing that installs the operator for your application.
Right. Well, so you can build operators with Helm. You know, there's that capability there, but because of, you know, some limitations in Helm, you can't necessarily do like, you know, alerting and, you know, logging and everything inside, you know, Helm. So the operator
it's funny to me. It sounds almost like, oh, we killed Tiller in Helm 2. And said, oh, we don't want that stuff anymore. And then it's like, oh, but we needed it. Let's do operators. I mean, is that
fair? I mean, that's entirely possible that operators, you know, were the answer to Helm and Tiller, right? Like there was, you know, with reason, some concern around Tiller for, you know, security reasons. And that's why in Helm 3 it's gone. And you know, right. I'm all for that. That was a lot of work. And like, I'm very thankful for it, because Helm 3 is now like something that I can go to people and say, yeah, just use this, right? Like, this is what you need to solve this problem.
Right. You don't.
Whereas before it was like, you have to use this. Oh, and there's this security concern, and now you have to go through all these hoops to get this, you know? So
fair enough. But I mean, our operators, you know, somebody's going to be like, oh, pop in this operator, and you're like, wait, what?
So yeah, no, there's right now, I think, you'll forgive me on the versions, in OpenShift 4, originally like every operator ran as cluster admin, and we know that that's not going to fly, right? Like we know that we want, you know, very specific project teams to be able to write their own operators. So that's getting baked in, you know, that fine grained RBAC control, having it so it's not running as cluster admin is very important to us. So it's either this version that has just been released or it's just coming out, either 4.3 or 4.4, I think is where we're doing that. Unless it's been pushed somehow. But yeah, like that's a very, very valid concern, right? Like we don't necessarily like want to have a cluster admin managing hundreds of operators for people, because, you know, in theory, it should be a very kind of GitOps kind of flow, right? Like I check in some code and it kind of just goes off and running. But if you don't have that flow set up yet, you're kind of going to have to hand it to somebody to say, please instantiate my operator, right? And update it, you know, as needed kind of thing.
Right.
So yeah, well, that's definitely a concern.
It actually get weird, because your operator could then do a, you know, Docker pull. You know, and I say Docker pull very specifically because I'm implying that it's coming from, you know, some hub somewhere that you might not know that's there. It's not, you know, a nice, safe Podman, like, you know, local repo.
Yeah, like, I mean, ultimately, like, that's the, you know, some of the best practices too, right? Like, you have to have that, you know, security best practice of having, you know, that local trusted repository, or some trusted repository. Doesn't necessarily have to be local, but a trusted repository, right? Like, you're not pulling directly from the internet, or if you are, there's a proxy there that's actually doing something for you, kind of deal. Like, those things still need to be managed, right? Like, you still have to have those good clean practices even in your operators. So yeah, like, having a testing framework. We're working on some things with a project that Ansible acquired. It's called Molecule, right? Like, having that testing framework in place with the operator SDK is very important to, like, give you that kind of idea of best good thing or not best good thing. So yeah, we definitely recognize that this, while this is new stuff, there are some definite concerns around security and best practices, and we're working on that. Yeah. But yeah, like, there's a lot that you can do with an operator. There's a lot of mistakes you can make with Kubernetes, and we don't necessarily stop you from doing that.
Right. And that's what I mean, because I'm watching operators come in, and I'm seeing a lot of enthusiasm for them. And so we're sort of getting to a point where we're, you know, like, oh, I'm popping in an operator, and I'm watching some people build up, you know, CRDs, and their CRDs are starting to look like the subway map in New York.
Mm.
And I'm like, I don't think that's the right, you know, and with any pattern, things get to be, you know, they get pulled back. We figure out what the right things are.
Well, remember, you know, when Kubernetes kind of, you know, blew up on the scene, we had this question of, is it going to be a lot of small clusters or a few big clusters? And we're kind of
wrote an article about exactly that. Yeah.
Right. Like, we saw initially it was big clusters at first, and now it's gone to these very small, like, you know, almost specialized clusters where it's not just necessarily prod or dev. It's no, I've got, like, my app is in a cluster by itself because this application team needs cluster admin. So we gave them a whole cluster. We realize that there's a overhead in that, and that's part of the operator, you know, making it so you don't have to have cluster admin permissions to do that.
Right. And one thing I like about the cluster the pattern is, if you define a CRD, that becomes your interface spec. So it's like, yeah, mm-hmm. I don't care what the, you know, the black box implementation is behind the scenes. I'm going to write data to the CRD, and so good things are going to happen, right? An early definition, I think it was Brian Gracely had a interview about this on his kubectl
podctl
podctl, thank you, podctl, of course, and the religious words begin. And so but it was like, oh, this allows us to abstract out getting a database, because if you're in a cloud provider, you can use their native build me a database thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the CRD should remain the same. That's very, very compelling.
Right.
In that.
So, right. Like, if I am using, like, cloud services, right. When I say cloud services, I'm talking about, like, AWS S3 or, you know, MS SQL in Azure land, S3's right? Like, I want to be able to manage those things with tooling that I'm already using and not have to pull in, you know, like a third party thing. You know, obviously there's, you know, there are CLI tools for individual, like, user management, and I would rather have a operator maintain that for me as opposed to trying to maintain that, like, in something else, right? Like, I already have to have all this Kubernetes YAML.
Right.
Do I need another tool to manage my Kubernetes YAML and, you know, on top of everything else, or should I just, you know, continue making operators to do these things that, you know, are for operational logic to be done with.
Right. Well, and in those cases, it ends up being very skinny, because really what you're doing is the operator is providing a translation layer between the CRD and the backend. Right. It's not implementing the database stuff. I think the thing I've started to see creep in is the operators are actually the app in a lot of cases.
Yeah. And that's kind of like, that's where it's very much like out of like what I would call like a good practice, okay. Not even best practice, right? Like, if you have an application that is sitting in a CRD, right? Like, that's kind of very, very, very flaky ground to be standing on, if that makes sense, right? Like, if you have all
you're actually helping me feel better about the pattern. I'm like, I am not comfortable with, you know, writing a whole application as an operator, that's
strange. No, like if your application needs to have its own stuff, right? Like your operator should then instantiate your application, or, you know, instantiate logging for that application, or instantiate, you know, just backups or whatever, or, you know, all those things, manage your application or manage that service that you're standing up.
That makes sense.
Use that operator to do management of service, right? Like if you're going to have a person do this backup, program the operator to do it. If you're going to have someone do this failover, program an operator to do the failover.
Gotcha. But yeah, this comes back to my troubleshooting question. So if you're troubleshooting an application and you have to interface with the operator to do it, then something's wrong in the design. You're saying, look, go to your application, figure out your application, making it work. The operator should basically be sitting in between to issue the instructions. So if you're doing a failover, the operator is not doing the failover. It's just shimming commands forward, basically.
So when you say the operator, are you talking about the code operator or the human operator?
The code operator.
Yeah. So if you're doing a failover, right, like you should be telling the operator to do the failover, if that makes sense, right? Like you're not, like, consider it as like the Ansible or the Terraform or the chef of your app in Kubernetes at that point, right? Like you want to use that automation tool to do the things as opposed to you doing them yourself.
Okay. So, I mean, in some ways it's not like this. It's not a script wrapper.
No,
it really is an inner. It
can be if that's all you need to do is run a script. It can just do that, but it can do way more than that, right? Like you can write full Go, like you said, you can write full Go apps, and you know, to be able to do this for you if you need it to.
So, for example,
if I have a really gnarly like database setup and I have to execute all these things and do a number of, you know, checks on different outside external services before I can say, you know, flip off this database service. You know, you would write potentially Go code for that, or, you know, some other kind of, you know, code base do that. And yeah, that would look kind of like an app, but if it's, you know, needed to check everything off your operational box first, then you're going to need to write an app.
I remember watching Kelsey Hightower at the first KubeCon actually show like single run containers that would do use cases like that, though. I mean, why is the operator better than just, you know, writing a short-lived pod for just to run a script in that case?
Well, the operator is going to be, you're not going to run, like if you need to do something one time, hopefully you don't do it with an operator, right? Like this would be something that you would normally do: upgrades, backups.
So PR, we're doing a consistent pattern. It's
declarative, right? You're declaring state as a pattern in Kubernetes clusters or across clusters.
Makes sense. So one of the things that occurred to me when I was thinking about this the other day, and I want to bounce off you, is it feels sort of like a stored procedure to me, which isn't necessary, right? And here's why. So I have data somewhere, and then something gets triggered based on a change to that data. Action, magic happens. It might actually write back to that data that I had. It might take other actions, side effects in the system. And so it's sort of decoupled from the data, but it's triggered by the data. And there was a part of my brain that said, that's a SQL trigger.
Kind of. I mean, instead of like data, right, like stored in the database, it is events or, you know, triggers in Kubernetes logs, or, you know, it's watching for something happening. So yeah, instead of like acting on data when touched, it's, you know, acting on events when triggered. So there's a lot of similarity there, you know, on a generic level. Yeah.
It's an interesting, you know, thing to me, because I used to do a lot of SQL stored procedure programming, and it's mind-blowingly powerful. It's back to the magic
thing.
You're like, oh yeah, just write something in this table and, you know, all sorts of magic, all sorts of good things happen in the background. And at the same time, it had to be very careful.
Yeah, you had people abusing it. Now, I remember I worked for a data center company that had a ton of stored procedures in their MS SQL database. Oh, sorry, my family just came home. the amount of logic that you put in there is at your own risk, if that makes sense. Do you want to wait for my dog to stop?
No, we're about to wrap up. So
okay,
we're right at the time, and you have been, you know, a true gentleman in allowing me to poke holes.
This is actually a lot easier than I thought it was going to be.
The pattern is powerful, and that's
right.
Clear. And I also feel like it's confusing, because I feel like we're just at a point now where everybody's like, well, I'm going to rub an operator on it and it's going to be.
Oh, yeah. But it has a purpose. That purpose is very well defined. You know, if you so seek out that definition, right? You can go outside of that definition. Sure, nothing's going to stop you, but there's inherent risk there.
So where should somebody go?
First stop,
to help us wrap out.
Right. Like, first stop, I would encourage you to go to operatorhub.io. That is all the operators that are like certified or community, donated or, presented and available pretty much to run in any cluster, but, specifically designed for OpenShift if they're, quote, certified Red Hat, operators. But these can run in any Kubernetes cluster, essentially, with, a little magic extra, stuff running. And from there, I would check out the openshift.com/blog. And there's a whole section for operators there that we've done a lot of work around. And last but not least, always check out the actual original CoreOS operators post.
Makes sense.
The CoreOS blog introducing operators.
They've been talking about it for a long, long time. So
2016,
part of a big vision for how CoreOS looked at Kubernetes from the very, very early days. Mm-hmm. So this isn't a recent thing. This has gotten a lot of thought. And of course, if you're interested in something beyond operators, DevOps-ish, how do people get the newsletter, right?
Newsletter's going strong. I'm super happy with it. Done some recent changes around privacy and, simplifying the layout, making it easier for me to write and folks not have to worry about their data getting slurped up and all that fun stuff. So yeah, go to devopsers.com/subscribe and, subscribe to the newsletter. You'll get it every Sunday morning, right when you're waking up, hopefully. And, you can digest it throughout the week and get up to date on all the DevOps and cloud native and open source fun going on in the industry.
Awesome. Chris, thank you. This has been everything I was hoping. I feel smarter, which is always
good. I'm glad. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thanks.